In the spring of 1946, in the small town of Texarkana, on the Texas-Arkansas border, a series of horrific murders were committed by a masked assailant known only as the Phantom Killer.
People are saying the Phantom is back, that after 60-some years he's come back, and that we need to be ready.
Every time we show that GD movie, there's a GD party out there.
So how does this work? Take your pants off. I thought maybe you could go down there and suck it.
Real people died, you know, young man. Real people died.
I come and go as I please. I kill when I please.
Like a lost reel from the town that dreaded sundown.
Oh, I just don't like these kinds of films so much.
This is for Mary. Make them remember.
Can't kill the bogeyman. His father is the devil and his mother is a whore.
You slut! You slut! You slut!
Get out of the car.
He said he was going to do it again. If he has a message and he's using me to get it out, I have to say something.
Get down on the fucking ground.
Jay Sills from Halloween and Innocent Prey and Carrie and totally a lot of other movies, and you are listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode 151. So last time it was our big 150, so we are now getting into, well, I don't know what's our, I don't know how you describe it, but well, over the 150s. So, and this time we're kind of going a little bit off-piste, as it were. We're covering a film, a newer film, because most of the films we cover tend to be, as you know, sort of older 70s, 80s, sometimes 60s or even 50s films. But this one, we're going back to the relatively recent time, to 2014, for the remake of The Town That Dreaded Sundown. It's another listener pick. Eric, whose listener pick was this?
It was picked by Shannon Kinney.
Shannon Kinney. Well, thank you, Shannon. This is your pick. We finally got around to it. So we've been working our way through listener picks. We've got a fair few more to come, as it were. But yes, this one is a little bit sort of, it's going to be interesting for us because, say, we obviously we do watch a lot of newer films, but we don't tend to cover them as much on the podcast. So it's going to be an interesting one for us to cover. So, but anyway, how are we doing? Eric, is it is pissing down with rain here in Bristol? How's it doing?
It's gloriously sunny in Dublin for some reason.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay. Well, fair enough. There you go. Horses for courses and all that. So, Joseph, how are you doing?
This Kit Kat is for Eric. Make him remember.
Ooh. Can I have it now?
I imagine Eric's just creamed his pants there.
Come and get it, big boy. Come and get it.
Well, yes. So that was that nice little visual, sort of like little, you can, what's the word for it? You can visualise that scenario, can't you? And keep it in your own little personal wank bank.
me gobbling away on Joseph's chunky Kit Kat.
Yeah. Oh dear. Okay, it's going to be one of those shows. Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm good. It's dark over here.
Oh, is that because you're...
Well, it is 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Is that because your clocks have gone back?
Yes.
Yes. So we're kind of back onto sort of we're kind of concurrent time, aren't we? Really, I think
we are. Yes, we are.
Yes. So so it makes it a little bit easier. Although, of course, our dear friends in Tennessee are recording this at 6 a.m. in the morning, which is shows their dedication to you, our dear listeners. Whereas me and Eric got the relative luxury of 11 a.m. UK or Greenwich Mean Time. So enough of that scintillating time zone talk. What have you been watching recently, Joseph? Have you seen anything of note you'd like to tell us about?
Yes, I went to the cinema to check out Jigsaw, which is the 8th installment in the Saw series. And I really, really like this one. It's kind of new in terms of the way they film it. It's not edited like an epileptic, like the previous 7 films. And it's a lot more fun than the previous 7 films, you know, where they kind of lingered on the torture. This one's just kind of gloriously goofy, rather than, you know, just kind of focusing on the pain these traps bring people. They just kind of focus on the ridiculousness of them. And it's basically people, rather than being tortured, they're trying to just basically escape. So it has that sort of almost like a thriller aesthetic to it. I really liked it a lot. It's really dumb, but it's a lot of fun. They recycle a lot of the same, you know, twists you've seen in these films before, but, and it's a lot more watchable than the previous Saw films. I don't really know what else to say about it without spoiling it. So, a thumbs up for me. I liked it a lot better than most of the films in the category or in the, catalog. Sorry. I definitely recommend it. It kind of reminds me a bit more of the collector films, whereas, you know, that one did a lot of the traps, you know, like the Saw films, but it was more just kind of, okay, how insanely, you know, idiotic are these traps going to get? That's what Jigsaw kind of reminded me of. So it's definitely a lot, you know, a lot. I hate to say lighthearted, but I guess it is sort of in a way. So yeah, a definite recommendation for me. Go see Jigsaw. It's I don't want to say a return to form. I'd say it's better than some of the form. I liked it a lot, actually.
Okay, Nathan, did you see it as well?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, what about you, Eric? Did you go and see it?
No, I'm not a huge fan of the Saw series, although even though this one has been getting good reviews, even from the mainstream press. I suppose I'm kind of intrigued, but just, you know, once bitten, twice shy. I just wasn't a fan of the Saw series.
It's the same for me, really. I was kind of, I think I made it through part two, and that's as far as I got, really. But having said that, the fact is, I mean, could you watch this film, Joseph, as a kind of like a, is it a standalone film?
It's a standalone. It's probably good if you had a little knowledge of the previous films, but you don't necessarily have to, because they kind of wrap up, you know, they kind of tell you everything that's important that has happened in the past. But it's more of a fun film, you know, whereas the previous seven were more kind of dour and straight faced. This one's just kind of like, hey, here's a tub of popcorn and a soda. Just sit back and enjoy 90 minutes of just pure lunacy. It's a lot of fun. I recommend it. Yeah.
Please tell me it's. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Eric.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that was my problem with the Saw series, is that it's so serious and straight-faced, and it seems to just wallow in suffering and that, and there's just absolutely no fun factor in them at all.
Yeah, the giving this to new writers and directors was a very smart move, because it's they do away with that kind of that serious tone and just go for fun, and that's why I liked it. It's just a lot of fun.
Well, now I'm enthusiastic, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's much better than that Saw 3D, right? Because that was awful. Oh.
Yeah, this is so much better than that. I'd put it on a par as far as, you know, just memorable, like being memorable. I'd put it on a par with, you know, the first and maybe the sixth one, because I think those two were probably my favorites from the previous series. This one, you know, it kind of has that, wow, that was kind of interesting, but at the same time, it's it does something a little more just goofy with it, and I like that kind of, you know, throw buckets of blood and just be goofy and silly and don't take yourself too seriously and just have fun kind of aesthetic they were going for here. So if they did another Jigsaw and they, you know, they kept the tone like they did Jigsaw, this first Jigsaw film, I would, you know, I'd definitely go see a sequel, because I think the Saw series needed a kind of an injection of just dumb fun. So on that note, yeah, definite recommendation.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you, Joseph. Anything else?
Boy, I'm struggling to remember if I watched anything else. I don't think so.
Okay, well, thank you. Nathan, how about you?
I watched a few things. One, I watched the special features on the 88 disc of Splatter University, which included an interview with slasher scholar Justin Kurzweil.
And how did you find that?
You weren't very hard on it, so I was very happy about that.
Okay.
You were very diplomatic.
Nathan said hard on.
Oh my god. But yeah, I mean, I love the film, and I thought that you know, they did a good job with the release, so I'm glad I got it.
Excellent. Okay. Well, so that's one we've covered on the podcast, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Did you like doing the interview?
Yeah. No, I did. It's kind of, I enjoy revisiting films that I hated in the past and seeing if I've changed my mindset. And I think I had, when we redid Splatter University on the podcast, I changed my mind, didn't I?
Mm-hmm. You did, and
I love that.
Don't worry. Yeah. Oh, God, what did you say, Eric?
I was just gonna say I love the dance. I think that's a guy put on a jukebox, puts a song on a jukebox, and starts to do a goofy dance in Splatter University. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite scene. Obviously.
And don't worry, Justin. I'm gonna go back through the Hysteria Live site and find anything you've given one star or less to, and we'll start covering those.
Well, isn't that your modus operandi anyway?
No. I'm actually picking movies that I just love and you just happen to have not liked. But, you know, I can, kind of change my modus operandi.
So that's pretty much everything that you like that he's not going to like.
Excellent. But the second thing that I watched, which I won't talk too much about because we might cover it at some point, was Urban Legends Final Cut. I wanted to show it to Wes, so we watched it last night. Mm. He did not guess the killer correctly. but I love that movie. I mean, I love both Urban Legend films. Like, well, I'm not a big fan of the third one, but I love parts one and two. I think they're a lot of fun, and they're both extremely goofy. I love in, you know, the second one, this girl, she's been like chased by the killer and her friends are dying and stuff, but she still keeps making her movie. And, you know, that's very
that's
important.
Kind of like Eyeball.
Yeah, they don't want to give up their vacation. But have all of you seen Urban Legends Final Cut? I know Joseph has.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, a while back.
Okay. Yeah,
it's been a while since I've seen it as well. So
that'd be fun to cover at some point.
You know, I love both films, but I really, really love Urban Legends Final Cut. I just think it's so gloriously bad in just the right way.
The gag cameo at the end was awesome, too.
Yeah.
I won't spoil that, though. And lastly, I watched a newer film with Dee Wallace called Red Christmas.
Forgot about that one.
Did you watch it?
I tried. Let's just hear what you say first.
Okay. The movie, it opens with an abortion clinic bombing, but one of the women getting an abortion at the time, like, I guess it gets botched and the baby survives. I'm not exactly sure how, but the baby survives and is very deformed. Well, you know, 20 years later, that woman and her family have gathered for Christmas, and so this baby that she thinks she had aborted, like, you know, 20 years prior, shows up at her doorstep and says, you know, that I'm the baby. And of course she doesn't believe it because, I mean, it's crazy to think that happened. So they throw him out. Well, he's pretty crazy, so he starts killing the family off one by one. I'm on the fence with this one. I feel like I liked it, you know, for the most part. I feel like the director really tried with it because there's a few shots that I thought were really good in the film that I thought they did a really good job with. And, you know, he definitely made use of color, especially with the whole Christmas being set around Christmas. Like, some scenes are filmed kind of in a green tent, others is kind of in a red tent. So it's kind of doing that with the Christmas colors and things like that. I think probably one of my bigger problems I had with it, and it's not a necessarily a bad thing, but this movie to me is Dee Wallace versus, you know, her long lost son. I mean, that they have so many confrontations in this movie between her and him, and the rest of the family, I mean, they're just sort of body count fodder. I mean, they're not really, I didn't think that they were very fleshed out. I mean, they just were sort of there to die, in my opinion. And also, the family just were – they did a lot of bickering. So, you know, it was sort of like, oh, who would want to hang out with this family? Because, I mean, really, I mean, the main likable one is probably Dee Wallace herself. And, you know, she's sort of the matriarch that, you know, is watching her family get – hacked up. There's a pretty good scene with one of the characters outside, and the killer comes up behind her and hacks her with an axe, and it just splits her completely down the middle. I know we've seen that death done before, but the way they did it was pretty fun. Another issue I had is that the final confrontation in the film happened so quick and abruptly that I had to rewind it just so I could make out exactly what had just happened, because there's like... I mean, I can't say without spoiling it, but the scenes that happen, I just thought they were edited so quickly that you can't tell right away what had just occurred. So I had to rewind and kind of rewatch and make out what happened. So, you know, that was, you know, but I'm sure they had a low budget. So, you know, I mean, I probably forgive them for that. But, I mean, the death scenes were good. But unfortunately, one thing it suffers from, which we've talked about before, is that it's not a fun movie. I mean, the killer is very sympathetic because, you know, through the whole movie, he keeps, you know, just saying like he just wants his mom to love him. And, you know, I mean, he's killing her family, so she's not really feeling very loving at the time. But I mean, he's very sympathetic though, because, you know, I mean, just the way he talks and the way he acts, it's like a little child. So, you know, you kind of feel some sympathy for him. And, you know, with what's going on with the family dying, like they, you know, like somebody will die and like the family will be so upset and crying and everything. And to me, it felt like a depressing slasher. Like I thought it was kind of a downbeat slasher, like, throughout. And I'm not a huge fan of downbeat films. I mean, I kind of like more high-paced or faster-paced, you know, just crazy slashers where people die and nobody necessarily mourns. But in any case, you know, I mean, it's worth checking out. So I'll say that.
Cool. Well, Joseph, you said you'd try to watch it.
Okay, well, yeah, I watched about 10 or 15 minutes of it, and my problem was that in those 15 minutes, I could already tell I was going to hate everybody in the film, so I stopped it, and I was thinking to myself, okay, I'll just go back to this later. I'm just not really feeling it right now, but after hearing Nathan's kind of half-hearted recommendation, I'm really not. I don't know if I'll be in a hurry to go back to it, if at all, so yeah.
If you do, I'd like to hear your thoughts about it because, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's not worth checking out. I think it is worth checking out, but I just, it's got some flaws. I feel like with a bigger budget, the director could have done, you know, really well, because I think it's directed well.
Cool. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. Is that, take it, Eric, you've not seen that.
No, doesn't sound like something I would enjoy, to be honest.
No, same here, really. So is it anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay, well, thank you. What, Eric, how about you?
Okay, well, I watched a film that is totally not serious and was kind of fun despite its horrendous reviews it got, and that's The Mummy from 2017, the Tom Cruise movie. Mm. It's supposed to be the first in a series of quote, universal dark universe movies. So they're trying to do a Marvel Universe type thing with these old Universal characters. Planned films include Phantom of the Opera, Dracula, Frankenstein, Invisible Man, etc., etc. So, yeah, this was nowhere near as bad as what the critics had led me to believe. Now, I'm still not saying it's a good movie. I watched it once and I would never go back to it again. But to my untrained eye, it's certainly no different to anything in the Marvel Universe. To me, all those comic book movies are very much the same. There's some of them get better reviews than others, and I can't really understand why, because they all look like the same thing to me. And that's the same thing here of The Mummy. It's Tom Cruise trying to stop a resurrected mummy from taking over the world, with the bulk of the action taking place in London. There's lots of CGI, there's lots of action, not a lot of plot. Lots of like threads planted in there for future movies that they hope they'll make, although this one tanked at the box office, so there's still a question mark over whether this whole Dark Universe thing will take off for them. But there's one really spectacular action sequence set on a plane. It's towards the start of the movie, and I think a lot of sequences from it were shown in the trailer. But I mean, the film is very run of the mill, and it has a Michael Bay feel to it. But then all of those comic book movies have a Michael Bay feel to them, to my eyes, as I said. So I was pleasantly surprised by it. Somebody at work just said to me, you know, it's not as bad as what people would lead you to believe. So I sought it out, watched it, thought it was, you know, passable entertainment. No, I just don't understand why critics hated it so much and love something like Thor Ragnarok or whatever the fuck it's called.
And that's one for the DVD or Blu-ray sleeve, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't see why people didn't like this, but they like Thor Ragnarok or whatever the fuck it's called. Eric Threlfall, the hysteria continues.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that. I mean, I probably will see it. I think, unfortunately, because now Love Film has closed down, so that was my avenue for getting sort of watching sort of newer movies.
Or can you not get them through the PlayStation on some? I got that through the Microsoft Store on my Xbox.
Yeah, but I don't really want to pay for. I mean, I'd rather just watch what I've got on Netflix or Amazon rather than sort of buy. Unless it's a film.
True,
I really,
I know what you mean. Yeah,
unless it's a film I really want to see, then I'll just wait until it comes through onto Netflix or something. Because it's not a film I'm desperate to watch. I don't really want to spend money on it. If I can help So, but what about you guys, Joseph and Nathan? Have you seen The Mummy or got any interest in doing so?
No, it reminds me a bit of the, just seeing the previews. It reminds me of that Frankenstein movie that Hugh Jackman did. I believe it was Hugh Jackman.
Yes.
It has that sort of feel to it. And I'm really not interested. I think we watched that Frankenstein at Grant Grant's one night and I was bored out of my mind. So I'm not a big Tom Cruise fan. I mean, I've liked a lot of his movies, but I'm not in a rush to go see anything he's in. So if I caught it, like, just kind of playing on TV, I might watch it. But I have no real interest in seeking it out.
Okay. I don't think it's really my kind of movie either. I watched those mummy movies that came out with, what's his name, Brendan Fraser, and I wasn't really a huge fan of those either, so I don't know if I'd be a fan of it or not. I mean, I might check it out if it came out on Netflix or something.
I've been watching this podcast I listened to, You Must Remember This, and they've just been doing, it's all about sort of classic Hollywood stuff, and they've done Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff kind of season, because they worked together, and obviously Lugosi was in Dracula and Karloff was Frankenstein, most famously, and they sort of talking about those. But like, it's just amazing how different those movies are compared to what they just presume people want. And it'd be interesting if they actually made a film. I kind of guess Bram Stoker's Dracula, the one, what's his name, Francis Ford Coppola's one, was a kind of a good mixture of kind of slight, it wasn't sort of super actiony, was it?
But
it,
no, I didn't like Bram Stoker's Dracula at all, I'm afraid.
Did you not? I liked it at the time.
No.
I think it looks a bit dated now, but I just thought it's a shame they can't make these movies without turning them into kind of superhero action all the way through. Which is nothing wrong with that necessarily, but if you've just got wall-to-wall action, it never stops, then it just becomes a bit boring, doesn't it?
It does.
Cool. Okay.
So okay, well, something else I watched, just one other thing I watched, which wasn't wall-to-wall action, but it wasn't boring either, to me anyway. It was a giallo from the 70s I hadn't seen before called The Fox with the Velvet Tail. Mm. It's just come out on Blu-ray in the States on Mondo Macabro. Now, I was tempted to buy a film called In the Eye of the Hurricane that 88 have brought out in England, but fortunately, before I did purchase it, I realized they're both the same movie. Mm. So it's AKA In the Eye of the Hurricane. You can get it in England and you can get it in the States. It's a giallo in name only. It's not really a giallo at all. It's a film about a woman who leaves her husband for her new sexy boyfriend, but it soon becomes clear that this new boyfriend and her ex-husband are in cahoots and are up to something a bit more sinister. So it's kind of like Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward, although probably not as good. It fits nicely into those late 60s and early 70s films like A Quiet Place to Kill or Oasis of Fear, which are labelled as giallos but aren't really. There's no black gloved killer going around. It's more of a suspense film or a mystery, maybe, like Toya would say.
Eric,
what?
You're off of your recommendation. I just came up with the brilliant joke of the week.
What?
What do you call someone who watches giallo in name only films?
I don't know.
A guy. That's what you call them. Wah, 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 wah. No, you call them a gynecologist.
I don't get it.
Gyno.
I don't get it either.
G-I-N-O. Gyno. Jallo in name only. Gynecologist.
I don't get it either.
Jallo in name what? Only. G-I-N-O. It's an acronym. I still don't understand. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Well, when people do these in name only, they use acronyms. So
gynecologist. Oh, okay. Okay.
So you're using the word brilliant sort of loosely.
Suck.
Well, you tried your best, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, bounce this ball.
You see what happens when. See what Eric goes through.
You tried
every week.
Your best, and you failed. The lesson is never try.
Yeah. What were you saying about me, Justin? Something derogatory,
I'm sure. It's just saying that this is what you face every week, isn't it? The kind of the harshness
of
the crowd.
Now the shoe's on the other foot, Joseph Henson.
Yeah.
Hey, Eric liked my joke.
I laugh at a lot of your jokes.
I know.
How dare you? Hope you get pelted with a bunch of Mounds bars today.
What are they?
It's the coconut chocolate bars.
I love them. That's bounties we have over here. I love them. They're one of my favorites. Ugh. Coconut rules. No. Okay, anyway, that's all I had to say on The Fox with the Velvet Tail. I thought it was really good, had a very satisfying conclusion, but it's not really a giallo. It's and it's quite slow, so don't expect wall to wall action.
I'm looking forward to seeing that one. That's
a gynecologist title.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's run through. The only film I've seen of note really is a new Spanish film which is streaming on Netflix over here called The Bar, or El Bar in Spanish. And it's the new film by Alex de la Iglesia, who I think he did Action Mutante and Day of the Beast and Witching and Bitching, kind of Spanish kind of sort of horror kind of action monster movies. Now, this one is a kind of horror comedy thriller sort of a mashup, and it's about a group of disparate kind of sort of individuals who end up in a bar in central Madrid during something happens, and when somebody walks outside the bar, they get shot in the head, shot dead, and then everyone runs away and panics apart from people in the bar, and someone else goes out and they get shot in the head as well by a sniper. So they've got to work out why somebody's trying to kill anyone leaving the bar and where everyone else has gone. So this had a sort of, it was, without giving too much away, because it kind of tips its hat a bit in the beginning montage of what the film is, and it's sort of turning into more of a horror movie. But it had some really nice touches, and it's quite funny, and it had like things like the kind of real mixture. It had like a kind of a homeless person sort of who's ranting and raving about Jesus in there, and then a woman who's just desperate for she's on Tinder the whole time, and this hipster who's got a big beard and everyone thinks he might be a jihadist because he's got a big beard, and just things like that. Is quite it's an entertaining mix. Was worth a watch if you like Spanish films. Anyone seen that, Eric?
No, I haven't even heard about it, but it does sound good. And it's on Netflix.
Did you get that from a supermarket?
there are some supermarkets in the film at the beginning of it, but it was quite...
They
only sell groceries, yes. But it's definitely worth a watch if you kind of like that it had a kind of slight feeling of Wreck, that type of thing, but not quite. It doesn't go down the zombie route, but it certainly goes down the kind of horror route and thriller, and even sort of tips its hat a little bit to the slash movie towards the very end, but not really. But worth a watch. I don't want to say any more, otherwise it was going to give it away. The only other thing I've been watching, to be honest, I'm watching it almost, I don't know, I have really mixed feelings about Stranger Things 2, because I've been watching it and I just kind of, I don't know, it doesn't click with me. The first series, it kind of clicked a bit more. Second series, I think, is good and I'm enjoying bits of it, but it's, I don't know what it is about it. I can't, I find myself checking my iPad all the way through it and, you know, doing other stuff while it's on, and I don't really know why. I don't know if it's over familiarity or whatever it is. I don't know. Have any of you guys watched either of the series? Or
yeah, I watched the first one. I liked it. Didn't love it. Liked it. I watched the first episode of the new one, and I don't know. I just, by the end of it, I was like, I don't know if I want to finish the rest of this. I think it was more of a when Stranger Things first came out, I was like, ooh, this is pretty neat. They're kind of, you know, going back to the 80s, and that's pretty interesting. But, you know, after that, there's really not much left. I mean, I guess I'm growing bored with the whole thing now. I don't know. I just don't have an interest to finish the rest of it.
Yeah, I don't know. What about you, Eric? Have you...
Well, I saw the first, I think we discussed this before. I saw the first season and wasn't impressed. I thought the first maybe four, how many, I don't know how many episodes there was in it, but the first maybe three or four I thought were boring. Then it picked up a bit from the middle and I thought, oh, okay, maybe it's getting good now. And then I thought the last few were meh. So I'm not going to bother with season two.
Okay.
Even if it got great reviews, I wasn't going to bother with it.
No, I just felt like you know, sometimes you think, am I the only person in the world who isn't clicking with? But I watch it to the end because it's something I can, you know, put on and sort of do other things while it's on. But yeah, I don't know. It should work for me, but it just doesn't. There's something missing. I don't know quite why. But yeah, anyway, so that is our recently seen. So,
well, I want to talk about Stranger Things.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Fuck you, go mind your own business.
Fuck you, go mind your own business.
Justin just forgets about me a lot.
Are you again? No, I'm only joking. Sorry. It's quite difficult, Nathan. You must admit, you must understand it's quite difficult to kind of being a ringleader of this many people.
Oh, no. I want to give you a hard time, but I do understand that. I wouldn't be good at it. I'd forget one of you all the time.
So anyway, let's moving on to the main attraction. Sorry, Nathan.
How dare you? I lean more towards Justin's opinion overall, in that I actually with season two I'm enjoying it, but I'm not necessarily on my phone or iPad during the episodes. But I also I can go several days without watching the next episode. Like, it's not one of those shows I'll admit with something like Slasher Guilty Party, I was wanting to watch the next episode immediately just because I was really that into that series. But with Stranger Things, I do still really enjoy it, but it's, I don't know. It's just one of those shows that I enjoy, but I don't necessarily love. So that's my opinion.
Well, thank you, Nathan, and so apologies for missing you out. Talking of Slasher Guilty Party, I still hasn't come over to Netflix UK, even though annoyingly it said when I checked the other day. I checked about a week ago, and it said watch season two Slasher Guilty Party, and there was no way to watch it, and now it doesn't even say that. So God only knows why it's not on over here. Because if Netflix made it, I can't really see why. There must be some weird rights issues. I don't know what it is. But anyway, so that is...
Have you thought about writing and asking them?
I might just do that, actually, yeah.
Well, strongly worded letter.
Yes. I'm just about to... it's really kind of not the kind of Hysteria Continues thing at all, but I'm just in the midst of season two of Versailles, which is which is all about the court of Versailles and Louis XIV. And it sounds... But it's really good if anyone has an interest in that kind of thing. But it's full of kind of... It's all really dangerous liaisons and people being murdered and poisoned and lots of sex. And so it's... if you like that kind of thing. But I thought once I finish that, I might write to Netflix and say, where the fuck is Slasher Guilty Party? So, anyway...
In that, using that language.
I might just do that. I might send a very strongly worded letter from upset in Bristol. So okay, well, let's move on to our main attraction, which is the Town That Dreaded Sundown remake, and Eric will bring us off bring us back
yeah.
in. Sorry, what?
I need to get up a synopsis of the plot. Sorry.
Okay, well, you can do that while we play the trailer, Eric.
Yeah, okay, we can.
You're
indeed
up against the clock.
Yeah.
Or what? Yes. Anyway, here we go.
Grandma, do you remember anything about the murders?
Your great-grandpa and your great-grandma lived in this house when it happened. He was the boogeyman, they said. Can't catch the boogeyman. Can't kill the boogeyman. You know, before that summer, everybody would leave their doors unlocked. And after the summer, you saw a stranger. You'd run the other way. And now, he's back.
turn around. Do not look back.
What are you doing?
The town of Texarkana has awoken to a gruesome act of violence.
He could have killed me. He didn't.
He chose that girl to be his messenger.
You fucked. You couldn't catch me 66 years ago, and they never will.
People say that he was a demon or a spirit.
A soul consumed by vengeance.
We are not hunting a ghost. We are after a flesh and blood killer.
Just about everyone around here has got some kind of blood on their hands.
He's gonna make
the town
pay for its sins.
Some days turn out great. It's okay. Cause some days turn out bright. It's alright.
Hello, Eric.
Sorry, I had my microphone on mute while I was typing away looking for a synopsis.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Now I'm back now.
Oh, the professionals.
I know, this is so professional. Okay, so this is from the Amazon.com plot synopsis section. 65 years after a mass serial killer terrorized the small town of Texarkana, the so-called Moonlight Murders begin again. Is it a copycat or something even more sinister? A lonely high school girl with dark secrets of her own may be the key to catching him. So here's the thing with the Town of Dreaded Sundown remake is that whilst I like the premise, I could admire how well it's made. It looks amazing, well acted. I like the way it ties itself to the 1975 movie in a kind of, quote, meta way. But I really didn't like the film at all. And I think this ties into what we were saying about the Saw franchise and what Nathan was saying about Red Christmas, is that I find that the film is probably takes itself too seriously. I think the kill sequences seem to dwell on the suffering of its victims, which makes it kind of uncomfortable to watch for me. It's the same reason I can't watch the violence in something like the Martin Scorsese gangster movies, Godfather, Casino, Goodfellas. All good movies. I can watch them once, but I can't return to them again. The violence in it is just too, it's too realistic, which is weird for a horror fan to say, I know, but I do like, as Nathan was saying, I like my slashers or my horrors in general to be a little bit more fun, which doesn't mean that they have to be comedic in any way. I mean, this week I was rewatching two of my favorite horror movies, both of which are deadly serious. One is The Exorcist, the other is Alien. Both are, I suppose, not overly violent or so, but they are, they do take themselves seriously, but you do have fun. Well, I do have fun watching them. So I find this film just to be a bit grim and dour and downbeat, which is why I didn't enjoy it. But if you're into that style of filmmaking, I think you'll probably really enjoy this film, because as I said, it's very well made, and it does tie itself to the, it's sort of a remake slash sequel to the original 1976 film, in the same way that Blair Witch Book of Shadows was a sequel but wasn't really a sequel. It in this universe, The Town of Dreaded Sundown is actually a movie that the characters in the film watch at the drive-in. So I thought that was clever. The fact that from the very start of the film, like, people know that there's a killer around is a problem for me, because I prefer slasher movies where people are kind of unaware there's a killer until maybe an hour into the film, so that you have this build up where characters are, you know, having fun and doing stupid things like playing strip Monopoly. I kind of miss all that from modern slasher films. Also, the fact that the killer speaks takes away any mystique and any eeriness, I suppose, out of the film. Also, the fact that the police are involved and there's detectives and all that, that is not the type of thing I like to see in a slasher film. And there's some odd moments in there that stick out like a sore thumb. One is the sped up sex sequence between that couple. I think he's a returning army man who returns and shags his girlfriend in a motel, and the scene is sped up like in A Clockwork Orange or something, and it felt really weird. And the other one is the comedy gaze and the peculiar stereotyping. And the second they're on screen, they jump into a car and it plays this really cliched high energy techno music, which they might as well have had a neon sign above them saying "Hello, we're gay" and a big klaxon horn blaring. But I can see why the film would have fans. As I said, it's extremely well made, acted, all that. But I find there's just tons of these post-80s slashers that I just really don't care for. And this is one of them. It's just, I think it's too serious. It's lingering shots of suffering victims and it's dour, downbeat atmosphere. I just didn't have any fun watching it. But I can appreciate that other people will like it. It just wasn't for me. It was like watching a less, I suppose, annoying Rob Zombie movie is how I would rate this. Is that too harsh? I don't know. I think we will have differing opinions. Joseph?
Yeah, I remember being nonplussed with the Town That Dreaded Sundown remake when it came out in 2014. But I have to say, you know, aside from a misstep or two here and there, I had a lot of fun with it this time. It has the obvious advantage of being an 85-minute movie, so, you know, it doesn't overstay its welcome. Also on the plus side, I think I like how the film, you know, rather than present itself as an out-and-out remake that basically forgets the existence of its source material, it chooses to instead, you know, to incorporate, you know, that particular movie into its narrative structure. So along with the quote-unquote true story elements of the crimes that apparently inspired the original film, though I'm still not 100% sure there is a method to the original film's madness, to be honest. I mean, Google searches are kind of vague about that. But anyway, I guess you'd call this a loose remake. But it has the advantage of doing away with the bumbling cop side plot of the original. And it nixes the comedic elements altogether to create, you know, what you said, a dark and kind of brooding atmosphere. It feels as if, you know, the Phantom can be just about anywhere, and I like that. I think some of it's, you know, rather tense, you know, when characters wander out alone, a big no-no, of course. And even when they're, you know, say, in the relative comfort of their own homes, getting head and sipping a beer, the kill sequences are kind of rather wham-bam in their own right as well. I think, like you mentioned, they do linger on the pain and suffering a little bit too much. But you know, as for effects wise and how they just kind of come out of left field, I like them. I think another plus for this film is some really, you know, rather extravagant cinematography. I mean, I counted no less than four or maybe five split diopter shots. And I love that I love that dolly zoom effect of the outside world coming into focus through the heroine's house late in the film. I mean, I think the film is just shot beautifully. I think if the film for me has a failing, it's probably concluded rather abruptly. I think the idea of a nameless, you know, kind of faceless phantom that no one knows who it is and no one will ever know who it is a better idea rather than the sidestepping into, I guess, Scream territory here with the reveal of it being two killers this time around. Spoiler alert. They both also have ridiculous motives, and it's explained kind of vis-a-vis a really wordy exposition dump. I don't know. It just doesn't really fit in with the dark kind of foreboding tone that precedes. That's kind of a minor gripe, I guess. I actually really enjoyed this one, you know, more than I thought I would when you chose it from the listener pick list. So, I mean, I wouldn't say thumbs way up, but, you know, slightly a thumbs marginally up for me at least. So there you go.
Well, let's see where Nathan is sticking his thumbs up his alley. Maybe.
How dare you? I like the movie. To me, when I first watched it,
and what do you think, Justin?
Oh my goodness.
I'm only joking. Continue, Nathan.
If I had a rhubarb pie, I would hit you in the face with it.
Oh, violence. Oh
my goodness.
No. But with this movie, I think when I first watched it, I'd probably give it a 6 out of 10, and I'd probably stick with that rating even this time. I like it slightly above average, but it would not be one that I would revisit very often. There's several things that I did like. I liked that they did, like, you know, a gay couple. I thought that was interesting. It was a little different take when a gay couple was the ones out, like, in the car, in the movie, and the killer was stalking them. And they did reuse the musical instrument. Is it a trombone?
Trombone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bone.
Do you find something funny about the word tromboner?
I do find something funny about the word tromboner.
So I like that they recreated that, but I do agree with Eric about, I don't necessarily like for it to show the victim, I guess, suffering. That's one issue I have with a lot of Rob Zombie's films, is that, you know, the victims in his movies really suffer, and I just, that's not fun for me. And I much prefer to have, you know, like, just have a fun time watching a movie. So, yeah, I mean, in this one, I did like a lot of the sequences, especially I love the severed head sequence where at the hotel, and, you know, the little chase scene with the girl with the broken leg. I liked that sequence because I didn't think those scenes necessarily lingered on, you know, any kind of suffering. I actually liked the opening, you know, murder sequence, the stalking part where you see him in the woods watching the couple in the car. I thought that was really well done, too. But I kind of agree as well that I wish the killer didn't talk at all. And I did kind of find that the whole finale with the killer reveals and stuff like that was just kind of meh for me. But I thought that for the most part, it kept my interest. I didn't find myself checking my phone or anything like that. So I would have to give it a good recommendation because overall, I will say that I thought, you know, it's really well done. But one thing I think I have to say is that I watched the original Town That Dreaded Sundown as well. And no scene to me in this remake matched the intensity of the final murder sequence in the original film, where the wife is getting stalked through the cornfield. I didn't think any sequence in this one just matched that. But it has great direction. So, I mean, I'd definitely give it thumbs up. But, you know, it, like I said, 6 out of 10.
Okay. What about you, Justin? Did you give it 6 or would you give it 1?
Well, I think I'm probably siding more with Joseph on this one. It's a film
Why don't you just marry Joseph then, if that's what you want to be?
Well, no, it's a film that I can remember enjoying when I saw it the first time. Or I couldn't remember that much about it. But I was surprised actually how much I liked it this time. I think I agree with the ending with the reveal of two killers felt a bit old hat after, you know, it seems, you know, it's almost 20 years since Scream had come out. So it's, no, 20 years? 2000?
It is?
Yeah, 21 years. Yeah, years, 21 yeah. years.
Well, it'd be 18 in 2014. 18,
yeah, so that's right. So that felt a bit old hat and I didn't think it really worked. But the rest of the film I really liked. I mean, I thought it was clever without being too clever, if that makes sense, because sometimes things can get a bit too convoluted. And I thought it worked, that whole kind of thing of being a sequel and a remake at the same time worked, because obviously essentially you had the killer or killers copying the crimes, sort of as kind of approximating the crimes that had been done in the first film, and which were obviously based on the real life murders, although I don't believe that the real Phantom used a trombone to kill anyone. I think that was artistic license. But I also kind of like, because it was, there were kind of things in it which that weren't really explained, which I kind of liked and found distracting at the same time. I mean, one was the fact that all the characters, although it's set in 2013, all the characters were wearing clothes that they could have been wearing when the original came out. They all had like 1970s wardrobe. But I read something with the, I think it was the director sort of saying it's, but it was all something that could be, would have been found at American Apparel at that time. So it wasn't too distracting, but it was kind of like all the cars were 1970s cars and all those. That, so it had this kind of weird dreamlike feel to it because it didn't quite feel grounded in reality. And one, the other thing that made it feel like that was the fact that whenever these murders were going on, obviously the first murder, or what we think are murders, after the drive-in, is the, or most of the other murders, and it's, they seem to happen in a vacuum. You have things like the massacre, or the small massacre at the garage station on Main Street, at the gas station, and nobody else. The rest of the town is dead. There's nobody around at all. And also the you know, the murders in the kind of in the at the farmhouse. And again, you've got people literally next door to them, but when it happens, nobody hears anything. Nobody. So everything seems to happen within a vacuum. Which isn't necessarily a problem, but it's kind of, it just kind of means that the film doesn't, it certainly doesn't feel grounded in reality.
That completely sucks that all the murders seem to happen in a vacuum.
Oh, is that your joke of the week? Yeah.
Yes. No, but it could be because it's so high quality. Sorry, continue, Justin.
That's right. I like the kind of, also the film had a kind of, if you notice, had a kind of soft look to it. Everything looked soft in some
ways.
The cinematographer.
Yeah. Like an early 80s movie almost.
Yeah, sort of 70s, early 80s. And that, again, I sort of like that kind of aesthetic. I think it was, like Joseph said, it's beautifully shot. The opening shot at their drive-in with the camera kind of, you know, dollying or whatever it's called, kind of going through the drive-in and sort of swooping around. And, you know, it's incredibly well done. And also, I found, although the killer was talking, I mean, compared to some of the other films that we've covered, where in the late 80s, where you got the killer wisecracking all the way through it, I thought the killer here was actually quite scary. And those kind of brief, I mean, I guess I didn't find the violence in it too distracting. I mean, I can see it went on a bit, but I thought the killer himself or themselves was quite a brutal and quite scary and just kind of very sudden and quite a force, which I thought was good. I like the gay characters. I thought was a nice touch, and of course, I think it was obviously a nod because it was Ryan Murphy, wasn't it, who kind of basically got this film off the ground, who did Scream Queens and American Horror Story and all those kind of things. So that was probably his insistence, but certainly kind of a nod towards. Towards him, and I like the fact that they weren't treated any differently, particularly to all the other characters. I thought it's nicely acted. There's a lot of kind of familiar faces in this, and overall, I thought it was really good. Apart from, I say, the ending, it just kind of felt that a little cleverness too far, and it wasn't shocking. It was just kind of, you know, it was like a rehash of the of Scream and other slash movies that followed. And I thought if they were going to be going, they could have gone off in a completely different tangent, either supernatural or something different to what they went with. But overall, I really liked it. I thought it's a great looking movie, and I think it's different enough so it does stand out from the crowd. So yeah, I'm glad we got a chance to revisit it.
I'm alone.
Three against one, Eric.
It is three against one. Well, two and a half against one. Nathan was sort of on it.
That was a little marginal.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. Okay. I'm not surprised. As I said, I can appreciate it. It's a well-made movie, and other people will like it, but it just wasn't for me. I prefer my slashers to be a bit, I suppose, trashier is probably the word. Yeah.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough. So. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So behind the scenes now, I couldn't find a lot. I think we were all saying this on behind the scenes during the week. It's just it was difficult to find behind the scenes material on this movie, which is weird considering it's only 3 years old. So who wants, Nathan, do you have any behind the scenes for us?
Well, I watched the original and I really enjoyed that one.
Okay. Well, I'm sure they should have had a special feature.
I read about the actual murders.
Okay.
You know, back when they really happened. And Justin is right. Nobody used a trombone to kill. That was specifically
in fairness,
made for the movie.
They don't use the trombone to kill. It's just a method of administering the knife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
just a little, it's a little odd and different.
It is.
But yeah, in the original or in the actual murders, I mean, for the most part, the killer just used a gun. But I guess that's, I mean, I don't know. I guess movies just don't find that to be as, I don't know if entertaining is the right word. No. If you're doing a movie about real murders, but
I prefer Jason Voorhees with a big hedge trimmer.
Yeah, me too.
Scantily clad teenager. Yeah.
But I mean, the killer was never caught. I mean, that's true. The movie mentions that. And yeah, the killer really was never caught. It's just kind of strange that he killed, you know, like a group of people over the course of like 2 or 3 months and then never again that people know of. So that's, you know, what I've got because I was reading about the real murders.
Okay. Thank you, Nathan. Joseph, do you have anything?
Yeah, I really couldn't find much, but the only thing I found was that the film was mostly shot in Shreveport, Louisiana in mid-May of 2013 for a 6-week shoot. Some of the locals were recruited as extras. 3 of the days were filmed in Texarkana. Downtown State Line Avenue was decorated with out-of-season Christmas decorations on June 12th. Filming in Texarkana began Monday, June 17th, and ended in the early morning of June 20th. The crew then finished filming in Shreveport, Louisiana. And boy, that's about all I could find. I was surprised because it's a new movie. You'd think there'd be a lot about it, but I just couldn't find anything.
Okay. Justin, do you have anything?
Just a few bits. It was kind of, as I mentioned, it was one of the kind of, I kind of don't know if it's earlier, I don't know when Blumhouse started, but Jason Blum, who obviously has now gone on to, or Blumhouse has gone on to sort of mega success with films like Get Out and, did they do the, they did The Conjuring and Annabelle and all those films, didn't they? I think in Blumhouse or am I?
I think so, yeah. And they did Happy Death Day recently, yeah.
Yeah, so they're kind of like a force of nature when it comes to horror movies at the moment. And Ryan Murphy really liked this movie, and obviously say he's a kind of the creative force behind American Horror Story and Scream Queens and various things like that. So, and he said he really wanted to see the film remade, and so went to Jason Blum, who sort of said, well, if we can do it cheaply, and it doesn't look like a cheap film, does it? It's not... it looks like there's money behind it, but and he got the director who name escapes me, but had done quite a few.
Alfonso Gomez Rejon.
That's right, yes, and he done sort of some episodes of American Horror Story. Jason Blum and Ryan Murphy persuaded him to direct this film, although he wasn't. I don't think he had much of a history apart from doing American Horror Story on like horror movies as such, but I think he did a really good job with this, and I think you say it looks great and it has some scary sequences. And he was talking about how the film was, you know, he'd had that aesthetic in mind of everything looking like the 1970s, even though it's set in 2013, which kind of gives it that kind of dreamlike feel to it, which I kind of sort of liked. I read a quote from Jason Blum. They said, "Are you a slasher fan?" And this is an interview, and he said, "No, actually, I prefer. Well, most of our movies are what's off screen. They're more about what you don't see than what you do see. I thought the remake of Evil Dead was pretty fun. I like the original too. I don't have anything against slasher movies, but most of the movies that we make aren't really slasher movies. I'm not as versed in that genre as I am in the supernatural." So that was probably, I think that was an interview around about the time the film came out in 2014. And obviously since then, they've done Happy Death Day, which we had a mini discussion on my Facebook page, the History Lives Facebook page, about I think it's Forbes.com said it's Happy Death Day, the, you know, it obviously made quite a lot of money, and the old kind of slasher thing of like relatively small outlay with no big stars, the old Friday the 13th template, and then easily gliding into decent profits, whereas a film, as you mentioned, Eric, earlier, like The Mummy, costs huge amounts of money, hundreds of millions of dollars to put on with major stars. And so when they tank hard, whereas that with a slasher movie made for $5 million, if it tanks, it's very unlikely that it's not going to make its money back, at least at the cinema or on sort of, you know, direct video and on Blu-ray. So is a slasher movie, you know, but will Blumhouse now start making more slasher movies? Maybe they will now that Jason Blum has seen this, because I don't think this film itself, I seem to remember when it came out, I don't think it was I don't know if it did get a cinema release in this country. I think it might have done, but I don't think it was a powerhouse at the cinema by any stretch. The Town of Dread Sundown is a relatively kind of... it's not a tentpole name, is it? It's not a film that people outside of the genre or an interest in the genre would necessarily remember. You know, it's quite a niche sort of a type of film. But yeah, that's pretty much all I have, I think. Eric, have you got anything?
Okay, yeah. Well, just to clarify, I thought The Conjuring was a Blumhouse production, but apparently it's not. It's New Line. Blumhouse were responsible for Paranormal Activity, Insidious, The Purge, and the Sinister franchise. I always thought The Conjuring was all tied into all of those, but obviously not. The other thing is, it did get a cinema release in the UK, apparently in April of 2015, but I can't imagine... I don't remember it showing over here, but I could be wrong. I've got very little else. I mean, it was passed uncut with a 15 certificate in the UK, which I find unbelievable considering the intensity of the violence. It's not necessarily terribly graphic, but I find it just kind of an intense movie. I thought it would be an 18 for sure. And considering that there's some graphic, well, not, there's some sex in there that I thought would lift it to an 18s at least. It was the first theatrical release in 15 years for Orion Pictures, which is now a subsidiary of MGM. Their previous release was back in 1999. It was a film called One Man's Hero, starring Tom Berenger, which sounds like perfect direct-to-DVD fodder, if you ask me. That's about all I have that hasn't been mentioned. Did you mention that the director had also worked on American Horror Story, which is how he got recommended for this gig by Ryan Murphy? And the director had also worked on episodes of Glee, which is probably, I've never seen an episode of Glee, but I imagine it's probably the polar opposite tone-wise as The Town of Dread Sundown. Yeah, but that's about all. As I said, it's just mysterious that there's so little information out there for a film so relatively new.
Interesting. Well, thank you, Eric. What do our dear listeners say, Joseph? You got our Facebook feedback on this movie.
Yes. Ara Alice Shen says, I'm honestly having a hard time recalling The Town That Dreaded Sundown remake. I suppose that's not a great sign. From what I can recall, it wasn't the greatest flick in the world, but it was serviceable and still miles ahead of what they did to other franchises like Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street. As far as the Patreon goes, I just wanted to encourage my fellow listeners to chuck in a buck or two and become subscribers, as the exclusive content is truly a treat. Oh, and here's a tip. If you download the Patreon app on your device and you download those episodes at home and stream them worry-free while you're out and about. So thank you for reminding everyone, Ara.
He's done our publicity for us.
Yeah.
I think when I posted the feedback thing for The Town That Dreads Sundown, we also did kind of a calendar of everything we're doing. So a lot of this feedback is going to be just kind of singing our praises with just a little bit of Town That Dreads Sundown remake, but I'll read it anyway.
Well, Eric likes his ego being stroked, don't you?
Yeah.
Like what? Sorry?
You like your ego being stroked.
I do.
Ooh. Anyway, Andreas Person and Dale, God, I hope I got your name right, says, The Hysteria Continues is easily one of my top five favorite podcasts of all time. Old slashers are something I have loved for all of my life, and finally finding a podcast with deep enough knowledge and interesting movie selections to keep me invested is so nice. While other podcasts talk endlessly about the big classics that have been discussed to death, you guys talk about deeper cuts like The Slayer and The Initiation, and that's so much more interesting to me. You're also very funny, so just keep up the great work, guys. And he had nothing to say about The Town That Dreaded Sundown. So thank you, Andreas. Let's see. Does Gareth Morgan say anything about The Town That Dreaded Sundown? It does not look like it, but I'll read it anyway. He says, you guys are the best and always have been. Huge influence on all slasher fans. My purchases will always be guaranteed if I see your mark on any of the extras. Just recently watched the Splatter U 88 films release and just love Justin's take on the whole movie.
Wow, so, second Justin, mention for you, Justin.
Well, yeah. There you go, yes.
Most interesting slasher fan, full stop. Okay, alongside Kim Newman. Okay.
Yes, he's famous UK journalist.
Yeah.
Who's also going to be on Rooney. the house on Sorority Row. Kim Newman's on that as well.
Oh, is
as
he?
We are. Yeah.
Andrew Rooney, he does have something to say about The Town That Dreaded Sundown. He said, I thought The Town That Dreaded Sundown remake was fantastic. I went back and watched the original. Really, really dug it. Mean-spirited and certainly an influence on Friday 2. smiley face he put at the end of that. So thank you, Andrew. Al Lee Dog, who I think I know who that is, says, I didn't dislike the remake of this film, but as with all films, being first counts for a lot. People still talk about the original with its crazy, apparently real trombone action, but I don't think they will talk about this one much, even if on the face of it, it's a lot better made. Finally, Lawrence Adams says, you guys are the best. Keep doing what you're doing, and I'll keep spreading the word. So very, like the background information, very little feedback on the Town That Dreaded Sundown remake.
It's interesting. It's almost like a meta sort of podcast for a meta film, isn't it? It doesn't yeah. film even exist. So there you go. But no, thank you for the feedback. Shall we, let's play how to get in contact with the show, because then we can come back. We've got some feedback from yes. other sources. So here's how to get in contact with the show.
The content of this podcast was provided by Justin Kurzweil, Eric Frillfall, Nathan Johnson, and Joseph Henson. If you enjoy our program and are willing and able to provide a donation, please visit us on Patreon and become a content-designated subscriber. That's patreon.com/thehysteriacontinues. For non-subscriber PayPal donations and general feedback, our address is the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com. To listen and interact, simply search for The Hysteria Continues on iTunes, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Susie versus Toya forever.
Yeah, so please do get in contact with the show. We've got a few bits to read out coming up, so thank you for writing in. Just sort of say thank you again to all our Patreon supporters. We are going to be recording after this episode our next Patreon pick, although I think the previous one's not out yet. When's the Sorority Babes in the Slime Bowl Bowlerama coming out?
Oh, you got it wrong again.
Oh, God, for fuck's sake. Anyway.
Slime Ball Bowlerama.
Okay.
We're trying to record a lot of content for the rest of this year, so we're kind of out of whack. But that Sorority Babes in the Slime Ball Bowlerama, what a title, goes out at the end of this month. So
say the end of November.
November, which is November, yeah.
Yeah, so we are recording the next one. I suppose we can let the Frankenstein out of the bag, but we're recording Flesh for Frankenstein, Andy Warhol's Flesh for Frankenstein, after this episode. So that will be going out at the end of December as a little Christmas bonus, won't it, I think? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, so thank you. So if you are a Patreon supporter, then thank you very, 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 very much. And if you're not, then please do, and it's just for like as little as a buck a month. You can get access to exclusive content.
And remember, if we reach 100 patrons, we do the Demons and Demons 2 Drunk Cast, and we're only 30 away.
Glug, 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 glug.
Indeed, yes. So just imagine that. Yes, the Town That Dreaded Sally could become a reality.
It's kind of flattering. It's kind of flattering that we actually have 70 people willing to do that for us. So
I know, it is.
It is very flattering. Yeah. So, yes, but thank you to those people. And also thank you to the people who have written in. So who would like to go with some feedback?
Okay, I have got one here. This is from Jonas, I think, from France. It might be Jonas, I'm not sure. This is via Twitter. He says, hey guys, firstly I wanted to thank you for creating such a cool podcast. I've discovered many new movies thanks to you and learned many things about my favorite movies like Halloween and Friday the 13th. With that being said, here's a quick message I wanted to share, perhaps by any chance for the next feedback section. Like many, I thought that the slasher genre found its roots solely in movies like Psycho, Black Christmas and Halloween. However, I recently found a cracking little movie from 1944 called The Lodger. It's available on YouTube. In this movie, set in 19th century England, a landlord and her family happen to lodge a strange individual who they suspect to be Jack the Ripper. As victims multiply in the neighborhood, their suspicions start to grow stronger, but is he truly the killer? Despite some obnoxious musical and dancing scenes, poorly sung and much too stretched, it sounds like Susie and the Banshees to me. This movie is really well made. And although the censorship was quite severe at the time for murders in movies, I could not help but think this was incredibly close to a slasher movie blended with mystery and film noir elements. I highly recommend it, but most importantly, it made me realize that the fear of serial killers in movies may be much older than Psycho. What do you guys think about it? Only as a suggestion, I would find it very interesting to learn your thoughts about the history of the slasher genre, perhaps through a special episode. But in any case, and as this message is already way too long, keep up the good work. From Jonas in France. Well, I've never seen The Lodger from 1944. Has anyone?
Well, isn't that...
Nope.
Well, I thought The Lodger... Let me just check. I'm just looking on IMDb now, but I think it was...
It's a David Bowie album.
No, it's a remake, isn't it? Well, I don't know if it's a remake of the Alfred Hitchcock. It was one of his earliest films, wasn't it? From 1927. Which was the... Yeah, it's Alfred Hitchcock. Landlady suspects a new lodger as a madman killing women in London. So it's a remake of the one of Alfred Hitchcock's first movies, which kind of has a nice link then to Psycho. So I've not seen the 1940s version. I think I've seen the 1920s version. And but I agree. I mean, obviously, that's one of the things I wrote in my book, which is available at all good booksellers, which the Slash Movie Uncut, a.k.a. Teenage Wasteland, which will be out in February next year, hopefully, in a new edition, just as a little...
Thank you for that commercial, Justin.
and that has a history of the Slash Movie, if you are interested. So, but yeah, no, I've always said that the Slash Movie didn't start with Halloween. I think it kind of crystallised into the perfect diamond of what the Slash Movie became with Halloween. But certainly you can trace a Slash Movie right back to, you know, all the way through the 20th and into the 19th century, essentially.
Yeah, so. But Pride and Prejudice.
Not Pride and Prejudice. Possibly. No. Right. Well, maybe not. No.
But I was trying to think of some old piece of literature or art, and that was the first thing that popped into my head.
Oh, well, that's because you're a classy bird.
I am a classy bird. I'm classy me.
Yeah. So...
well, in my tracksuit bottoms here that are sort of halfway down, revealing the crack of my arse.
There you go. It's another mental pitch. Another one for the wank bank.
Yeah. The elastic is gone on the top of them.
Yeah, but you can pull them up if you're sitting down, surely.
I am sitting down. I'm trying to pull them up, but... yeah.
Gosh.
Continue.
But continue.
Eric, have you been lax on your Kit Kat intake lately?
I haven't had a Kit Kat in ages. Yeah.
Well, who would like to go next?
Nathan?
Have you got anything?
I have one.
Oh, Nathan.
I have one here.
Okay.
This is from Bill Barnes, and he says, hi.
Is that it?
Hi, Bill Barnes.
Hi, Bill.
I don't have anything, but if there is a Bill Barnes out there, please write in.
You made it up.
Oh, goodness sake. Okay, well, I do have one here. It's... this is, says starts.
Is this from Bill Barnes?
No, but it says hi.
Bill Barnes is the new Tosca Top Sauce.
Yes, that's
it. Yeah. Or Simon Logan.
Yeah, Simon Logan.
You didn't say Simon Logan properly, Joseph.
Well, he hasn't written in a while. I'm a little irritated with Simon Logan at the moment.
Okay. Well, this one is somebody I don't believe we've heard from before, but he says, hi, I really enjoyed your episode on Hollow Gate. And I was shocked and honoured when Nathan read part of my review of the film from my blog, Senseless Cinema. I'm glad you found the review funny. I've been listening to your podcast for about 2 years and I've loved every episode. My tastes run towards the more homemade slasher movies like Don't Go in the Woods and A Day of Judgment, not to mention some you haven't covered yet, like Moonstalker and Blood Harvest. But your coverage of the big franchises, the classic, Jali, etc. is just as entertaining. I would also support your podcast covering Rob Zombie's Halloween remake eventually, if only because the entertainment value of your discussion, drunk or sober, would balance the cosmic scales, making up for the 2 hours I spent plodding through that film. Keep up the great work. And that's from Dr. Pseudonymous. Well, I can't pronounce that word.
A pseudonym, yes. Pseudonymous. I don't know how you'd pronounce that word,
exactly.
Actually.
Dr. Pseudonymous. Yeah. So
maybe he should just remain anonymous.
Maybe. But I mean, I think maybe we should bite the bullet and do the Halloween remake next year. I mean, maybe we should.
Can I be drunk on that episode?
I think it'll have to be a drunk cast. It really will have to be a drunk cast. We get Rob Zombie on as well and Sherry Moon. And we can have a big punch up. Like we can have an old style 80s bar brawl like in Silent Rage.
God, that movie.
Yeah, but wouldn't you like to have a 80s style bar brawl?
More Justin than Justin. That's my wrong.
Nathan only likes things up his alley.
Yes. Well, if you this missed the last... true. Well, actually, no. Well, that's another reason to listen to the upcoming episode of Sorority Babes in the Slime
Ball
Bowlerama. or whatever, because Nathan has the number one double entendre of all time in that.
Yep.
Of all time, really?
Well, possibly yes, of all time.
Yeah, possibly of all time. It's so good. We end the episode with it as well as a little. But yeah, you'd have to listen to that. Become a patron supporter to listen to that. Although, having said that, Joseph has put it on the Facebook group. So if you want to check that out as a little preview, then it's all there for you. But is that all the feedback for this time?
That is all the feedback.
Okay. Well, I can
guess. You know what that means.
Well, actually, there's two things. We have after the credits and joke of the week. So
yes.
Who would like to go first?
Eric, would you like to go first?
Okay, go for the joke of the week.
My finger is hovering over the button. Here we go.
It's my joke of the week. It's so, so fucking fantastic.
Did you hear about the locality that coated an entire dress in crumbs? They were known as the town that breaded some gown. Who's that crowd?
I liked it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Eric, I don't know if you'll take this as a compliment or not, but I felt that joke was so bad it was good.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a compliment.
That's a compliment.
It was ludicrous. It was torturous, great. But it was quite funny.
No, Justin was laughing so much that he couldn't stop pressing buttons. His hands were out of control.
I know. I went into spasm.
Okay, I think it's time for after the credits, huh?
Okay.
Yes. All right, after the credits this time, we see that somebody looks like they're stalking the final girl from the town that dreaded sundown. Now, I'm going very meta with it. I think it's somebody that watched this remake and is going to start killing based off of it within this movie. You see how meta this is?
That's exactly what I was going to say. So
I was going to say something similar as well.
quickest after the credits ever.
Well, no, my one was going to be that the sequel opens up with the final few moments of this film, but then it pans back to reveal that it's some kids at a summer camp watching it on Blu-ray, and then the rest of the movie is them being stalked by a proper killer who is silent, and they're all sort of brainless teenagers who wander around in skimpy clothes, and it's more like Friday the 13th. And I enjoy it.
Interesting.
Well, like you, Justin.
Well, I was thinking, given that she was all the way through, she got accepted into university in California, didn't she? So I thought she goes to California, but she, because everything that happened is that through the movie, she got obviously very upset. It took a while for her to recover, so she couldn't join the university until just before Christmas. And as she got there, they were closing down the dorm. And she got roped in to make new friends and then had a head run over with a car.
Maybe the
town that tripped blood.
The town that tripped blood.
And maybe the university she got accepted to was Splatter University.
Exactly. It could be, couldn't it?
The dorm that dreaded sundown.
The dorm that dreaded sundown. That's a great title, isn't it? Mm. So many different things. And when she gets there, everyone's wearing polo neck jumpers and bell bottoms and sort of early 80s, sort of.
And it's a bit dark as well. The lights don't seem to work properly.
And there's somebody with frizzy ginger hair running around.
Oh, yeah, go on, say it.
What?
You're going to say something about Toya, aren't you?
Well, it's the early 80s. She'd taken jobs where she could get them. So that was anything else you want to add after the credits, Nathan?
No, I don't think so, except I do think that she survived. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, well, she did survive, didn't she? Oh, well, she was kind of mortally wounded. Well, not mortally wounded. She was kind of shot through with an arrow a couple of times, wasn't she?
Yeah, but I just mean like the killer stalking her at the end, that was nothing. He did not end up getting her at any point. So. Okay.
Right, okay. Well, what's left to say apart from what are we covering next time?
Yes, what are we covering next time? Joseph.
It would be my pick, and we're going with another listener pick. And this time I have decided to pick Evil Dead Trap. It was chosen by Craig Hatch. So, yes, Evil Dead Trap.
So it's the first time that we've covered a Japanese movie, isn't it?
Yeah. Good luck doing the montage for that one for the start of the show. Yeah.
Oh, I've got an idea. I've got a great idea.
Okay. It'll be interesting. We can talk about Asian slashers as well, can't we, with that one as well. So I think that'd be an interesting one to do. So, yes, so looking forward to that for next time. And what are we playing out with, Eric?
I don't know if you're going to use it, but I found, there's the old Elton John song, Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me, who were misses. I found a version of that done by the Chippendales, the famous male stripping group from the 90s.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, I don't know. I think it might be too bad to use even on our show. So,
come on, Eric. We played out with Toya a few times and nothing can be any worse. So, anyway, you'll see you next time. So say goodbye to the good people.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Make them remember Eric.
Everyone remembers me.
I can't lie.
I've got a winkle.
Hey. That's the first thing I heard when I joined the call. I got a winkle.
Yeah.
One is so sensitive that even the smallest touch makes it go off.
It's gonna go off in Eric's hair.
My pants fell down. I'm glad I'm not on camera.
I was gonna say I miss the days of ice bucket challenges and fidget spinners and Pokemon Go
and blue and black dresses. I'll be right back.
Okay.